sorry, it was my aunt's birthday. She makes such a big deal about it. Well, nobody likes to get old, right?
Well, birthdays are merely symbolic of how another year has gone by and how little we've grown. No matter how desperate we are that someday a better self will emerge, each flicker of the candles on the cake, we know it's not to be. That for the rest of our sad, wretched, pathetic lives, this is who we are to the bitter end. Inevitably, irrevocably. Happy birthday. No such thing.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Holy Commutes for Monday, January 17th, 2022. Paul and Tim Cook back with you for the second Monday episode of January. So it's January 17th, so happy birthday, Tim.
Thank you very much.
Did you ever think you would still be involved in Wolf of Wall at this age?
I did not, but I'm happy to be. It's interesting. I don't know. I guess I figured I'd always be around in a little bit of capacity, but
that, was it 40 or 50 that Dan said, our teammate Dan Eisenberg said in that article? Right? So it was 40, right?
It was 40, yeah.
He turns 40 this year too, right? So like we need to get him out for something.
Yes, we do need to work on that. Get good old Dan back out.
He's got to stick to his promise. All right, so today's show, I know we said last week we were going to have a couple of interviews coming up here. Stuff got in the way. I started a new job last week, just sort of general procrastination. So we didn't get the one together in time, but we will have the next one. We will have the other one next week. We'll talk about that at the end of the podcast. But we decided to go with just a little bit different of a format today. Tim, you'll ask me a question. We don't know what these questions are. Any sort of Wolf of Wall question that you came up with for me, I'll answer it. We'll discuss it. Then I'll ask a question to you again. We haven't pre-discussed these, and we'll just kind of go from there. So let's do two blind questions, one apiece.
Yeah, could be a little bit shorter of a show. Could be regular length. We'll see when we get to these answers in the discussion.
Depends how good of a question you ask.
Yeah, I think this is a top-notch question.
All right. So.
No, go ahead.
Yeah, no, it's your birthday. You go first.
Okay. Oh, thank you. Okay. So my question is, well, let me just start off with a tiny bit of background. So, we like when we're watching baseball or any sport, but, specifically baseball, we're very much analytics people in that, if something can teach you how to be better, or how not to do something, how to do something better, how to not be bad at something, you use it. But with that also comes a thing of, you hear a lot about, if there was a clutch player or a clutch, moment, what would that be? And the thing that we've always struggled with, and it still is today, is, well, you can't really measure clutch. In almost any situation, in a clutch situation, I'd want my best player to be, right, performing. When you play at the highest level of a game, you got there because you're good. So, yeah. There really is a thing as clutch, Brett Phillips was, as clutch as you can be in the 2020 World Series, but he is still young and hasn't had, too great of a career. Then you've got, veteran guys who've been around who, seemingly always deliver. So with that out, I don't like the word clutch, so I'm going to use the word remarkable.
Okay.
So I want to ask you, and this can be from when we were playing, this can be from when we haven't been playing, what's the one or two most remarkable plays you've seen in your 20 years around Wiffle Ball?
Okay. I want to try to pick one out from from when we were playing from back in the day, so I'll probably give you two. So yeah. The first one that came to my mind when you said that, we've seen a lot of really, I think, remarkable plays in MAW, the past 5 years, using the word remarkable, the first one that came to my mind, was Connor's home run off of Tommy Loftus in the 2019 MAW Championship Series. Like I said, there's been, we could pick from a lot of big hits and big home runs. We could go with, from AW, could go with Red's walk off on a Voodoo in the semifinals this year. In terms of Championship Series stuff, there's a lot of big ones. That to me is sort of the ultimate, just because, that game seemed to be so done, that long balls Earl game. Long balls were up in it was the best of three series for the Mid-Atlantic Championship. Both won their semifinal series earlier that day in two out of three games. Long balls took game one. They were up on Earl, four outs away from the title. They were up 2-0, right? I believe so. They were up 2-0. Tommy was pitching well. Everything was coming up long balls. It was one of those things where much was, really swinging. And Connor takes him deep for a three-run home run, completely changes the game. They win that game. Momentum's completely switched. They win the last game. To me, the reason that was so remarkable is just because for all the reasons I just said, things seem to have shifted so far in the long ball's favor. They were the underdogs coming into that series, obviously. So, it's not a... by no means was Connor hitting the home run off of Tommy an underdog thing, but it's just sort of one of those things that you didn't think was going to happen. You didn't even think about it happening, because it just didn't seem like something that was going to happen at that time. Yeah. Maybe he gets a single, maybe he gets a double, maybe something happens. But not that three-run home run, not the way it happened. That really sticks out of my mind.
So that was one that I had in my head for MAW. I'll give my answer now. And it actually goes back. So this is pre-MAW, and there's two moments that stick out, both from 2003 and both from the Northeast Championship in 2003 and then the Fast Plastic National Championship in 2003. I'm not going to put them in order, so I'll go with the one, I'll just go out of order and to go with the one from Texas. Adam Friend was our fifth player for 2002-2003, and he made, at least on video, at least live and what's been able to be captured on video, one of the best running catches that I've ever seen, where the ball went off the bat. He just turned around. He was at the shortstop position, just ran as fast as he could, looked over his shoulder once, dove, and was able to make the catch. And live it was still more impressive, but the video we have of it is as impressive, a play as we can, as we have. The other, and this is where the whole thing of clutchness, really loses its definition. So when, and this is another stomper example, I know being kind of selfish here, but in the third place game in the 2003 playoffs, where the winner got to go on to Texas, we were playing Lakeside, and Lakeside had their ace on the mound, and it was 1-1. It was starting to get dark. It was a long day. We had been on the brink of elimination multiple times.
Rainy all day.
Yeah, it was not. We almost had a team blowout fight in the Wawa. I mean, it was a it was quite a day. And so in the third inning, you came up and it was men on.
I think it was bases loaded.
Yeah, I think it was bases loaded. And
I know it was.
So got into the hole. 0-2, may have worked a ball or
one and two.
So, Mike Palanzar's out in the field and he's talking, you know, like he usually talks, and you know, nothing, you know, it was basically, you know, oh, he's not swinging.
I think it may have been 0-2 or 1-2, and then I took a ball or two. So then it was, he's not swinging.
And then that next pitch, you ripped a single right up the middle, and that ended Hunzel's day. That was kind of maybe, you know, the Stompers equivalent of that Earl moment that you mentioned before, in that game was completely swung around. If the odds were 50-50, or even maybe they were even in Lakeside's favor, even though it was still 1-1, once that happened, the odds, just the momentum swung, and we never looked back. And that's an example of, like, you know, someone just, you know, being able to produce a moment because they've played enough at, you know, at a high level. No one's calling you into the Hall of Fame for your playing.
Or not.
Certainly me neither, but like, those, you know, that moment still sticks out to me as something that was just, you know, remarkable, especially since it helped get us down to Texas and, you know, essentially knocked out our biggest rival of the prior 2 years.
Yeah, I mean, just a couple of thoughts on both of those things. You know, first, Adam's catch, I think one of the things that made that really cool too was that you know, the very, very little was being videotaped back in those days, far less than should have been, you know, because by 2003, you know, I kind of feel like more stuff should have been taped, but far less stuff was. And then the stuff that was wasn't seeing the light of day because there was no distribution network for it. You know what I mean? There was no YouTube.
Yeah.
And, you know, to upload, you know, shit onto the internet, you know, in the early 2000s or late 1990s, if you're using dial-up internet, could be a, you know, it could be like a 2-day exercise if you could even ever get it done. So like that, I'm not sure I saw, you know, so the Wiffle Ball documentary crew from 2003 was filming that and captured that. So like, I'm not sure I remember seeing a good catch, because also good Wiffle Ball catches were hard to come by. They're still kind of hard to come by, but yeah, even, you know, even more so sort of in that era, in the Northeast was really, really pitching dominated. So yeah, to have that capture, I think really sort of, I think the catch stands on its own. But yeah, I think that coupled with the excitement of, hey, this actually got on tape, was really cool. And yeah, like, you know, to your dad, appreciate, you know, you you know, pointing out was probably the biggest hit of my career, and you know, in 15 years of playing, that fits me, that it was just a single to take the lead. It wasn't even a walk-off or anything. But you know, I think to the larger point, I think that's one of the things, I know it's one of the things you and I like about baseball is like, you know, if we think about our favorite baseball, you know, teams of 2012 Orioles, the 2014 Orioles, stuff like that, those magical seasons, you always remember the or you know, you and I do, at least, you know, the little guys, the role players that contributed in some way. You know, and that's kind of my takeaway from, you know you mentioning that, is like, so you know, those are some of the cool moments when you, I think, for better or for worse, I think Wiffle Ball has become, I would argue for worse, very much of a star driven thing. You know, and I think we've seen over the years, you know, some of the collateral damage of that, and, you know, in players not sticking around just because they're not stars. But also just, you know, I think it kind of makes it less fun. You know, I think it's cool when you have those, you know, role players out there. You know, a guy like me would never, I won't say never, because I think we have had guys like me at the last couple national championships, but, you know, the years before that, you know, not necessarily. And I think that's a shame, you know, because those moments are really cool when you have a guy that is just a role player. And like you said, you know, has the experience of playing, isn't going to get hits every time, but has the experience, isn't going to, you know, is going to have a good at bat and then comes through in a big moment. Those are the great stories, you know, and I would like to see more of those in Wolf of Wall.
Yeah, and we'll link both of those out. I know Adam's catch I have clipped out. We'll clip out Paul's single. It's and this is not, I'm not, this isn't a Mike Palanzar bashing session. It's just funny in that clip to watch Palanzar's head just go down as he goes to get the ball. Just, you know, seeing that, you know, it basically on his face, how are we letting this guy beat us? And when you're that guy on that team, there's nothing that's more fulfilling than that.
And to Mike's defense, I think he would take that as a bit of a compliment, and he would recognize that. But you know, the compliment being that, you know, he never expects to lose, and certainly doesn't expect a guy like me to be the one to beat him. All right, so it's my turn.
Yeah, your turn.
All right, I'm trying to decide with my. I had a few in my head. Mine's less specific than yours, but I'm kind of interested because we've talked about this. You know, I was trying to think of something we haven't actually like talked about. You know, in this we have, but I kind of want to, you know, hear your thoughts in a, you know, condensed version here. If you were to come up with your idealistic, national championship, what what that would accomplish, what that would look like, what would it be in wiffle ball, in fast pitch wiffle ball?
That's a good question. My ideal national championship, well, one, I mean, there's a bunch of components. One, obviously, you play the full regular season, and the way you qualify to get into the national championship is by, you know, is by how you play during the season. And in my estimation, I think the perfect, not perfect, I think the right number of teams is 8. I don't know the format off the
top. Oh yeah, I'm not asking for format. Go ahead.
It's a spot where, okay, these 8 teams have separated themselves from everyone else. You know, of course, there could be a situation where, you know, the 9th place team, you know, just misses out. That's, you know, but like these 8 teams, okay, everything they've done during the regular season gets them to the postseason. And, you know, in front of, you know, as many people as you can get live, you've got a chance to not only show people's on the field abilities, but also learn about their personalities, because it's a more focused tournament. If there's 5 people a team and there's 8 teams, there's 40 players, you know, that's 2 MLB rosters. Learning about those guys, and, you know, then having a rooting interest, you know, is something that, like, you know, we want to see happen, you know, sooner than later, so that, you know, the game, you know, can become a little bit more of a spectator sport. You know, right now it's tough for it to be a spectator sport for a lot of reasons. Inherently, just because it's, you know, it is such a niche. But I think that's my answer. I'd love to see.
So, I mean, I guess, you know, it, just as a follow-up question, so I mean, I guess it'd be fair to say, you know, based on that, that, like, you know, and again, this is idealistically, this isn't, you know, this is, if this is, if all the stars, you know, align in a way where, you know, this is practical and serving all the other needs of the football community, but it's safe to say that, like, you know, the focus then is, you know, would it be safe to say that you believe the focus of the national championship should be to, you know, crown the team that was the best that year, correct?
Correct. Yeah. And by, you know, one thing people don't understand in all of sports,
Americans, at least,
yes, but especially in baseball too, is that, you know, okay, you play a full regular season. It's 162 in baseball. It's 81 in basketball. I think it's around 81 in hockey. That is a large enough sample size to figure out who the best teams are. Then when you get to October, it really is a roll of the dice, because if it's, you know, if it's a best of five series, you know, best of five and best of seven series are ultimately for 162 games, you know, too short a series to really get a true outcome. I think if you played 11 or 13, I think you'd get a little bit closer to really finding the team that was more talented. But just getting to that point of, okay, here's the final eight teams. We're going to put them in these, you know, best of three series to get to the semifinals, finals, and there are quarter, semis, and finals. And, you know, the best team is the one that's left standing. I think that's, you know, that's the most interesting.
Yeah, but my answer is similar to yours. You know, and the reason I ask this is because, like, you know, we've been having discussions about this obviously for the last, you know, couple of years. And I, you know, the fact that, you know, you, who I talked to about Wolf Ball more than anyone, I had a good idea that's, you know, that was a general, you know, your general viewpoint, but I didn't know for sure. You know, it probably says we need to, you know, focus in more on that, but like, God, I lost my train of thought, but yeah, so I wasn't totally surprised by your answer. But yeah, your answer is very much close to mine. I think, you know, you know, we've talked to a lot of people that, you know, like the national championship because it's a, you know, it's a big, you know, it's a big hangout and stuff, and that's cool. And I totally get that. And that's, you know, I think we all, you know, enjoy that thing. You know, to me, I always come back to, you know, the idea of the big focus point being, okay, you know, who was the best champion this year? Not who was the best champion for this one tournament, best team, sorry, for this one tournament or this one weekend. You know, it's an annual thing. So, you know, there kind of has to be that progression to knock down, especially now more than ever, because there are so many good players and teams out there that, you know, wacky stuff can happen on one day. You know, and we know that, you know, especially in a sport that borrows from baseball, like you said, Tim, where, you know, that there's a reason baseball, there's more than one reason, but, you know, one of the reasons baseball has the longest season of any of the team sports in America, you know, is for that reason, because it is sort of the most prone to variables and prone to, you know, to different things happening. So you have to have that long season, because any team can beat any team on any given day to really sort of separate, you know, the top from the bottom. And I kind of think I kind of think that's the case in wiffle ball, you know, especially now. You know, I go back to you know, the early 2000s, like when we started this talk with, you know, to me, always sort of I think the bunch of, you know, every national championship that has come has tried to do, has had their own focus. So, but the one that really had that same focus that we're talking about now of trying to find the best team, I think, was the original USPPBA in 2001, you know, where there was an East Coast region and a West Coast region. The East Coast went all around to 6-7 different locations. So you had all these teams, you had your, whatever, your eight-ish regulars that basically played in all of them, you know, four to, you know, six-ish that played in, you know, or maybe another eight that played in, like, you know, three or four. Then you had a bunch of local, then you had ones that played in one or two. And then you had some local teams that just played in their one local tournament, but were part of this. You got those, you know, whatever, 30 plus teams down to eight for the playoffs. I'm sorry, down to four for the playoffs that first year, you know, four on the West Coast, four on the East Coast. You got that down to one, then those met. You were really certain by the end of time, you know, like, yeah, it's nothing is ever perfect. I was in the box was better than the Lakeside Kings during that season. Lakeside beat them in the best of three series, you know, to advance to the championship, but that's fine. At least they, you know, they all did the same stuff. And I think that's really cool. I think, you know, you just hear a lot of people say, you know, yeah, we want the national champion to determine the best team. And, you know, I don't think that happens. I agree. I don't think that happens fully. If there's not sort of that whittling down thing throughout the season, otherwise it's just another tournament where anyone can win, which is fine. But
yeah, And at the end of the day, you know, back in the early 2000s, you know, the heated debate was East Coast versus West Coast. I mean, you know, and when the A-Bros went undefeated in 2001 and went into Lakeside Park, you know, which had already been predetermined as the, you know, championship field, and then have to play the hometown favorites. And they actually had 128 people pay to get in to that event. That wasn't surpassed until this past year's United Wiffle in terms of, you know, taking in paid tickets for an event. But that was a lot more interesting, and I think not nuanced, but that was a much more interesting, you know, a debate back then than, you know, than some of the debates that, you know, go on today.
Yeah, I didn't even think about it from that aspect, but I agree. I mean, I always, you know, we always talk about, we think about wiffle ball a lot, especially now as fans. And, you know, I think that's another, you know, big sort of, you know, benefit of that is you have that whole year to get to know the teams. These are the teams, these are the players on these teams. You know, it's and like you said, they form their own identities. They may form their own identity separately, you know, from each other. And then you get these meetings that don't happen, you know, all year long. But even if they do, you have these teams that have built up this history, you know, so you get better stories. You know, that's kind of been the common theme through both of these questions is, you know, it's the stories that really make stuff. And that's what really gets people's attention. You know, I think that's a big benefit for it. You know, you can have those, you know, what's better, the East Coast, West Coast thing, instead of, okay, well, you know, is this collection of five guys better than this collection of five guys? You know, it's lacking something. So yeah, I agree with you. That would be my ideal. Whether we ever, you know, get there or not, you know, remains to be seen. But I guess I should clarify my ideal is like the 2001 USPBA, because there was also a lot of stuff wrong with that that you and I have, you know, discussed over the years. It kind of killed those local tournaments because, you know, those local tournaments were thriving on their own, getting 16, 20, 24 teams. Then it kind of got wrapped into this organization and it kind of lost their identity. Those local teams stopped playing. But yeah, more some sort of structure where, hey, you know, these teams are established before the national championship tournament. You know, all it comes down to, I think, is, you know, I think we both agree. Yeah, we want to see the best of the, we really want to see the best team. We want to come away from that saying, okay, this was the best team all season long, not just this weekend.
Yep, totally.